It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Lisa Edwards has supported Independent Tech News directly for 5 years. Be like Lisa. Become a DTNS member at patreon.com/DTNS. This is the Daily Tech News for Tuesday, April 23rd, 2019 in Los Angeles. I'm Tom Merritt.
And from Studio Feline, I'm Sarah Lane.
And from pleasantly warm Finland during the day, I'm Patrick Vejo.
And from slowly increasingly hot Southern LA County area, I'm the show's producer, Roger Chang.
Thank you, Roger. We have got chips. We have got drones. We have got monetizable DAUs. Yes, everything you want in a tech show. Let's start with a few tech things you should know.
JCPenney no longer supports Apple Pay, but the retailer told TechCrunch it's because it missed the April 13th deadline for supporting EMV contactless chip functionality. JCPenney says it has suspended all contactless payment options until a later date.
Aww. OnePlus will hold launch events for its OnePlus 7 phone lineup in New York, London, Beijing, and Bangalore on May 14 at 11 a.m. Eastern. OnePlus is selling tickets to the events, but it will also stream them on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, and its website.
Why didn't Apple think of that? Source tells Reuters that Samsung is calling back in all the review units of the Samsung Galaxy Fold. Another source said that KH Vatech conducted an internal review of Fold hinges and found no defects. That's just a source. Samsung isn't talking about it yet. Samsung has delayed the launch of the Galaxy Fold, if you didn't hear about that, while it investigates problems discovered by journalists who were reviewing the folding tablet. All right, let's talk a little more about the new Intel chips, Patrick.
Absolutely. Intel announced its 14-nanometer 9th-gen H-series processors for high-end laptops. These are not battery extenders, which with 45-watt power draws, but offer up to 5 gigahertz of clock speed. I can't read today. The flagship of the H-series is the Core i9-9980HK, which can be overclocked beyond its rated 5 gigahertz clock speed, has 8 cores, 16 threads, 16 megabytes of cache, and supports Wi-Fi 6. Intel says the chip will have 54% faster 4K video encoding and 56% improved gameplay compared to three-year-old computers. The series is available now in Acer, Asus, Dell, HP, Razer, Lenovo, and MSI laptops.
I mean, I'm keeping this laptop plugged in if it's got one of these series of Intel processors in it. But if you need like a desktop replacement laptop, you're going to do some video editing in 4K, you're going to do some serious gameplay, 5 gigahertz clock speed, 16 megabytes of cache. It's pretty beefy.
Roger, you were pretty pumped about this before the show.
Well, it kind of marks not a turnaround, but definitely a lift from Intel, where they're noticing that, like, we need to start getting back into the game, so to speak, instead of just sort of coasting on our existing product line. What's interesting to note is that it's still relying on the 14 nanometer process and not towards the 10 that they've been having a lot of trouble trying to get to. But, you know, for the longest time, there have been manufacturers of laptops that have used desktop CPUs in them in order to generate the amount of processing power people needed. Intel said, well, why don't we just skip the middleman and give you a mobile processor that is DTR, desktop replacement quality, and we can basically get you a very fast, high-performing laptop, but using a mobile chip instead of a desktop chip, which they've already released. I think we'll see how serious they are when they start pricing these parts out. Now, of course, the high-end chip, the HK 9980, is probably going to be the top of the bunch, but how much of a premium remains to be seen. But I'm pretty excited.
Yeah, is that because you want to get something that has video editing capability in it like this? Well,
typically, once they start coming out with the higher end parts, they typically within maybe half year start dropping the price on everything else, right? So I'm hoping to get a good. There's going to be a point where your value goes up as they start flooding the market with these newer processors, and AMD will try to meet them somewhere in the middle. But definitely, it's definitely. I will say this as a consumer, I think everyone will be benefiting from this in this about 6 months' time.
Yeah, because it always has that cascading effect, yeah. like you say.
It feels like to me and I don't know a huge amount about desktop replacements, which are a relatively niche type of desktops. I think a lot of people usually, when they go for desktops, want something that is relatively light, and these are not that. Maybe with this one, it will be a little bit more the case, but when you're talking about desktop replacements, it's not quite laptop-sized computers anymore, especially when you try to target gamers. Now, of course, this CPU...
You dropped out for us. You were saying
CPU.
Sorry.
This CPU specifically has a better performing GPU component, integrated GPU. So it might help more. But if you need to add a discrete GPU on the board, then the laptop size becomes enormous. And from my experience, the integrated GPU that Intel designs have not been sufficient for serious gaming. They keep improving by 40-50% every couple of years, so maybe they finally reach something decent. But from what I've seen until now, it's usually not enough for anyone who gets that kind of laptop for a game without an additional GPU. So
yeah, it's definitely a niche product. I'm not gonna suggest otherwise. However, my experience, gaming the target market for these necessarily aren't gamers, although there are gamers among them. Back at when I was at CNET, we used Alienware gaming laptops to edit on the road because they were the most portable solution that we had as we went from venue to venue. Instead of lugging around even a shuttle box, which is maybe 6-8 pounds total weight, still a lot to carry because you still have to have a monitor, keyboard, and mouse. With a gaming laptop or at least a high performance desktop, plug in a mouse, you flip the screen open, and you can edit out the gate.
Now, I know there's at least one person out there right now who's saying, no, I want a desktop with a powerful GPU, but I only have $150. Well, guess what? Sarah can help you out.
NVIDIA's cheapest GeForce Turing video card. In fact, the GeForce GTX 1650 is now available for $149, which offers a lower power 1080p experience for a more affordable price. The GTX 1650 joins the GTX 1660 and 1660 Ti. They're both based on the TU116 GPU. The GTX 1650, though, ships with 896 CUDA cores enabled, spread over two GPCs, clocked to 1665 megahertz. NVIDIA opted not to allow the press to test the 1650 cards ahead of time, though, so reviews have yet to come. In fact, Niantic says this is not only highly unusual, but almost suspect. Niantic also says that based on specs, though, it seems that the Radeon RX 570 from AMD is probably the best comparison, matching price, beating in performance, but falling off in features that relate to power efficiency compared to the 1650. And Antec also expects the GTX 1650 to deliver around 60% at least of the performance of the next card up in NVIDIA's product stack, which would be that 1660.
So these are desktop cards. If you missed me saying desktop, these are not laptop like our CPUs. But yeah, you know, more affordable options out there. Although Enantec is a little miffed that they didn't provide reviews. They're like, hold off buying it until we can get a card and test it.
Sure, yeah.
But they still think that the AMD cards probably are the better buys right now. But these are competitive for sure.
It's a weird segmenting thing that they did, especially with the naming conventions at NVIDIA for this generation. And it's always, they always play around with things, but their current generation is the GTR 2000 series. And traditionally, the cards that you would like to get and that serve the lower-ish end and mid-range are the 60 series and 70 series. And with this generation, if I'm not mistaken, they were priced a lot higher, the 2000 GTR 2000 series was priced much higher than the equivalent in the GTX 1000. So the GTR 2070, for example, was much more expensive than the GTX 1070. And now they're kind of filling up the wide open gap that they had with this intermediary naming convention and technology, which I don't even know what to think of anymore. And I think that waiting for an Antex review is absolutely the thing to do, because not getting review units is always weird and suspicious.
Yeah, yeah. And don't forget, this is not a fully enabled TU-117 GPU, although it is the first with the TU-117 that has a TPC fused off. So Enantec also speculating that maybe we'll see a TI version of the 1650 down the road, but it's odd that that didn't come out now either. Alphabet's UAV company Wing is the first drone operator to be granted FAA approval under the rules for a traditional charter airline or small air cargo hauler. That gives Wing the legal authority to start dropping products to customers from the air. I mean, not literally on their heads, but drone deliveries. Wing plans to begin routine deliveries of small consumer items from retail partners in two rural U.S. communities, Blacksburg and Christiansburg, Virginia, within a few months. Gaining the FAA's approval as an airline meant creating safety manuals, training routines, implementing a safety hierarchy. A lot of work. It took months. The approval will, however, now make it easier for other U.S.-owned companies, like, I don't know, Amazon maybe, to get approval as well, because the FAA has worked through what you need to do as a drone delivery company to get this kind of certification. If you're saying, wait a minute, this sounds familiar. Earlier this month, we told you the CASA in Australia approved Wing to make deliveries in the suburbs of Canberra, Australia. So that's already a program that is getting underway, and now there'll be one in the U.S. as well.
So it's happening? Like, it's actually happening? We're getting drone deliveries?
We've had drone deliveries for years in places like Rwanda, Tanzania, even the UK, parts of Europe. Yeah. We're just finally getting it from the people we expected to get it from, which are the big names like Alphabet and Amazon, maybe.
I asked a friend. He grew up in Virginia. I was like, Blacksburg, Christiansburg, know them? And he's like, yeah, they're very rural. Mm-hmm. And the whole idea with Wing is to get partnerships with retail partners eventual retail partners, but that already exist in these communities, which would be somewhat different than probably how Amazon might roll out something similar to this, because Amazon always, you know, likes to have their own warehouses. So it'll be interesting to see what the, you know, is there pushback? You know, is the community happy about this? One would think if it works well, it's better for everybody.
Yeah, it does show, though, that you have to be a big company to make this happen in the United States.
You're not getting FAA approval if you just
have to go through a lot of hoops to get this going. And yeah. I'm not even sure if Amazon will bother going through this. Maybe they will. They could. They certainly have the ability to do it. But Zipline, the company that's been doing delivery in Rwanda and Tanzania for years, is not going to go through this. I can tell you that. They're not going to go through all of the procedures that Alphabet did. So it kind of leaves it in the hands of the big companies in the United States.
I'm not so sure they wouldn't. I mean, if it's their entire business, and yeah, it's obviously a lot of work, but it's not an impossible amount of work. You go through the requirements that you have to go through, and you have some people working on it, and it's what they do all the time. They know this business, and the U.S.
Well,
is...
Well, I think that's the key, though. You have to know the airline business to get this approval, not just the drone business. And I'm just guessing it's probably not cost-effective for them. Yeah, maybe I'm wrong.
Maybe. All right. Did you think we didn't have enough numbers? Well, Twitter is here to help out. Twitter's first quarter earnings report showed revenue of $787 million, up 18% from the same quarter last year, and net income of $191 million, and earnings per share of 25 cents. The U.S. accounted for $432 million, or 55% of Twitter's revenue, with international revenues at $355 million. MAUs were 330 million in Q1, 6 million fewer users compared to a year ago, but up 9 million from last quarter. Twitter says this is the last quarter it will report MAUs, as it will focus on the dailies, which the company considers its more valuable number. Monetizable DAUs were 134 million in the quarter, up 11% from a year ago. 28 million came from the U.S. and 105 million internationally, though the U.S. accounted for 55% of Twitter's revenue. Japan is Twitter's second largest market by revenue.
So there's a big mismatch there. You know, roughly a third, well, maybe even you could look at it as a quarter of its business is domestic for Twitter, is the U.S., but more than half of its revenue is U.S., which means as good as it's doing on revenue, if it could figure out how to monetize those international daily active users that are monetizable, according to this metric, they'd be bringing in a lot more money.
I don't know that that's necessarily the case. It depends which markets we're talking about. If it is Western markets, certainly the revenue could be comparable to what they're getting in the U.S. But if we're talking about, you know, lower revenue kind of markets, poorer markets, it might not be possible to monetize them enough to make that leap. And they're talking about monetizable DAUs, which maybe they're not monetizing all of them, but I'm guessing they're monetizing some of them at least. And it's still not even reaching half the revenue overall.
So, well, I mean, that's the whole thing about monthly actives versus daily actives, right? Is Twitter is like, listen, you can monetize the person who's going to Twitter every day much more than the person who might be checking in once a month. So the monthly active users, while an interesting metric, we don't want to, you know, we don't, our next quarterly earnings, we're not going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the dailies. But it is interesting that even though international markets is where Twitter is growing, the U.S. is still where it's making its bread and butter, at least 55% of it.
Yeah, and I'd still say, Patrick, without disputing everything you said about not all markets are as monetizable as other markets, that's a very good point. There's still such a gap that they've got to be able to make more money than they are. They've got to be able to at least in even that out a little more and shift it to more of its revenue coming from international than the U.S. I think that's reasonable to expect. Mm. And monetizable DAUs means we're not talking about drive-bys. We're not talking about people who saw it embedded on a site somewhere. We're not talking about bots. We're talking about active users that are real people. That's important.
Sure. They might all be in India, though, where, that's not going to be. They're not, of course.
Well, or they're me. 28 million of them are in the U.S. And I never see an ad.
I don't either. That's weird. I have never seen an ad on Twitter. I wonder if it's because they don't want to bother the people who have.
I'm still blissfully unaware.
Yeah. That means they're not monetizing it very well.
Yeah, that's right.
Very quick question to finish us off on this. How much are you buying that the reason they're shifting the numbers is that it's a better one? Or do you believe that it's because they are giving up on actually getting more monthly active users?
I think it's absolutely both. I think if monthly active users were continuing to go up, they'd still report it because, hey, it looks good. But I also think there's a legitimate reason to say, but the DAUs, the monetizable DAUs particularly, are a legitimately better metric for what we're doing.
All right. Are we ready to talk about 5GE?
Yeah.
I know we are. AT&T and Sprint have settled a dispute over AT&T's controversial 5GE rebranding of its LTE service. Sprint filed a lawsuit against AT&T back in February. We talked about it at the time, claiming that 5GE was misleading, causing customers to believe that the network was actually 5G. Terms of the settlement weren't disclosed, but sources told the Dallas Business Journal that AT&T will probably continue to use the term 5GE going forward. So I don't know, some money was changed hands and everybody went back to the drawing board. So it's time for the public service message again. If you missed it the first time or the second time or the 40th time, if you see 5GE on your AT&T phone, you are getting LTE service with carrier aggregation 4x4 MIMO and 256 QAM for faster LTE. You are not getting 5G service if you see 5GE, despite the misleading name. And it is misleading. A study by Open Signal in March found that AT&T's 5GE-capable phones received service about as fast as T-Mobile and Verizon's LTE, but faster than Sprint's.
Which is why it made sense that they sued AT&T.
Right.
I do wonder if it was money changing hands, which we don't know. Could have been.
We don't. That's true.
Or if it was toll access or network access to Sprint. Like, hey, we noticed how bad your LTE number was. You know, we could help you give you a little access to a few more regions, you know, boost your speed. How about that? You make this lawsuit go away. What do you think, Sprint? Huh? Talk to me. AT&T. That's what
I'm saying. That's true. Yeah.
My AT&T voice.
I originally was like, okay, so Sprint got some money and now they'll just shut up. But the exchange of services somehow that benefits both companies makes a lot more sense.
I like Drew Nielsen in our chat room saying the E stands for 5G. Not really. No. We bring this up again because I'm not going to call anybody out, but I heard people who are very tech savvy recently saying, I think I'm getting 5G. My phone said it. And another one was saying, well, wait, are you sure? Because you don't think you have a 5G phone. And I didn't verify this, but I'm like, oh, I bet they're an AT&T. I bet they're getting 5GE. And they just forgot that doesn't mean they're getting 5G.
I think there's no other possible explanation for that.
Yeah.
And also, I would love for you to actually call them out. But so I have a proposal of idea. I absolutely hate this. I think it is deceptive, dishonest, and manipulative. The what, sorry?
You mean 5GE.
Yes, 5GE. Yeah. The whole idea that 5GE is, you know, what AT&T is doing. It's terrible. However, didn't they do this with 4GE
T-Mobile
a few years ago?
T-Mobile started calling their 3G HSPA Plus 4G, even though it was not.
Oh, right. Right.
It was annoying for about a year or maybe a little bit longer. But nowadays it's long gone and it didn't, you know, everyone knows what 4G is and 4G wasn't significantly impacted by these shenanigans of 4GE. And so maybe this is going to be the same thing. It's just we're annoyed by it on the principle of it, but how damaging is it actually?
Did Sarah use the term 4G, and how many times did she use LTE when she was telling us this story?
Zero.
Well,
zero
she said LTE.
Of 4G. Because that term got bankrupted early on, and we had to start saying, well, we mean LTE, not HSPA+. I don't know that we're going to have to do the same thing with 5G, and I don't even know what the term, what the equivalent for LTE would be, millimeter wave, maybe something like that. But could lead to that, and it leads to confusion. That's the thing. You have people who are like, "Yeah, I guess I get 5G. Cool, this is great. I'm sticking with AT&T. Well, they rolled me out to 5G."
Well, and the thing about this whole story, and you know, again, it's coming from the Dallas Business Journal that AT&T is like, okay, we settled it, but we're going to go ahead and still call it 5GE. If that's true, then it will continue to confuse people.
Yeah. So pass it along to your friends. 5GE, not 5G.
Yeah.
Key by Amazon, however, is expanding. That's Key, K-E-Y, to 13 new U.S. cities for Amazon Prime customers, bringing the total of its 50 total cities to 50. Key, if you're like, wait, what's Amazon Key again? It's the $119 a year in-home, in-car, and now in-garage delivery service. This is the one that they'll come up, get your door unlocked with like a smart lock, leave your package inside your door, close your door. Well, now you can have your packages left in your garage. If you have a Chamberlain smart garage door with the MyQ connected garage door software, if you don't have a smart garage, Key does require an internet connected door lock and security camera for the in-home delivery, or you can get in-car delivery if you have an active OnStar or Volvo OnCall account where they
A Volvo OnCall account.
Yeah. And you can have, they can leave it in your truck.
Yeah, you know, it was funny. I recently got a Volvo, as I've talked about on certainly Good Day Internet, and it was funny. That was like a big selling point that the nice man selling me the car was like, and guess what you can do? You can get your packages put into your car. And I was like, all right, well, I don't know. I mean, I'd rather just have it like inside the gate of my home because I don't have a garage.
Well, because you work from home too. This is for people who are like, oh, my car's out in the middle of the parking lot. That's kind of cool. Yeah,
It's a very cool novelty thing that I think probably is going to be very attractive to certain people, although it is limited depending on what car you have. But and again, I don't have a garage, so I'm like, whatever.
I think a
lot of people with garages will be excited.
I think more people are going to be comfortable with them leaving this in their house than in their garage. Have you seen people's garages?
What? I would much rather have somebody leave a package in my garage than my actual house.
So many people keep so much stuff in their garage. I don't know. I'm curious.
No, I'm with Sarah. Don't you keep stuff in your home, Tom?
Yeah.
It's much easier to get into a garage. So if somebody, I'm not worried about the delivery people stealing as much as I am the person walking by going, hey, that garage has some cool stuff in it.
Well, but that's why the security camera keeps everybody honest.
Is there a security camera or just the smart garage door? I don't think there's the security camera required for the garage.
That's just the front door. Mm-hmm. Just the front door. Exactly. Okay. Well, all right. So, yeah, that would be a limitation. Yeah, I hear you on that.
The other question I have is to Volvo and OnStar users, what you going to do with all that junk Amazon leaves inside your trunk?
I know, it's just going to melt.
Please email us feedback in the heat. Folks, if you want to get all the tech headlines each day in about 5 minutes, be sure to subscribe to dailytechheadlines.com.
And thanks to everybody who participates in our subreddit. You can submit stories and vote on them at dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com. Bookmark it today. Also bookmark facebook.com/groups/dailytechnewsshow. Good conversations going on in both places.
Let's check out the mailbag. There's another place for good conversations.
Absolutely. And in fact, we got a great one from Kevin. This was like Kevin, let me learn something new. Yeah. So Kevin says, I consume fairly large amounts of tech news every week, either in the form of podcasts, Go DTNS, or tech news sites. But I came across something today I've never heard of in my life. I was curious if Wikipedia was downloadable. Turns out that it is. The file is just about 15.4 GIB. Kevin says, first, I assumed it was gigabytes. And then I looked closer and I saw the little I in there. And I looked it up and found out it stands for gigabyte with a B, not a G. Anyhow, after doing a search on the difference, turns out that gigabyte is a base 10 decimal term and that gibibyte is a base 2 or binary term where gibby, mebby, and kibby are called binary prefixes. Easiest to explain is with the kilobyte versus kibibyte, which has to do with that extra 24 bytes we're all aware of, where 1 kilobyte is really 1,024 bytes. Not actually 1,000. So kilo, mega, and giga are nice round decimal numbers. Kibby, mebby, and gibby are the binary equivalents. i.e. 1024, 1024 squared, or 1024 cubed.
Very cool.
I love this, Kevin. I love this.
So very so, Wikipedia to use gigabytes to delineate this, because it's huge. I mean, I guess they have to.
Yeah.
First, just very surprising. It's only 15 gigabytes, honestly.
Gigabytes.
I apologize. But don't you have in English gigabytes? Yeah, you have gigabit and
yeah. Gigabit is a speed measure. Gigabyte is a
bits and bytes
data
are different.
Amount measure.
Yeah.
No,
gigabyte
but gigabit
is base 2 1024 squared 1024 cubed. So it's quite
so what's the
a
difference
bit more
between,
than a gigabyte.
What's the difference between gigabit and gigabit?
Gigabit is a throughput measurement. It's not
no,
a
it isn't. It's gigabit per second,
yes.
The throughput measurement.
Right.
But gigabit
how much
is still
data
a quantity
is coming
of
per
data.
Second.
Yes, yes, yes.
It's
but
not a
gigabit is the amount of data, and gigabit per second is the speed.
Right.
But the amount of data,
you're,
I think,
you're
is
asking like why are you using why aren't you using a speed measurement for this storage measurement? That's
okay.
It's
the reason I'm saying this is that in French, gigabit and gigabyte are two different ways of measuring data, and one is the decimal and the other is the binary. And I think that in English it might be the same.
Yeah.
In which case I don't
giga,
understand what
which is a whole new one. Another one that allows you to measure extraordinarily large amounts of data easily.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'll let it go and we can talk about it in Good Day Internet afterwards.
Ask Kevin.
Although Kevin, I'm so glad you brought this up because as I read your email, I was like, what? I didn't really know that either. So, you know, thanks for schooling us and sparking some conversation. Also, thanks to Patrick Beja for being with us this fine Tuesday. Patrick, what's been going on in your world?
Right now, I'm Googling gigabit and gigabyte and gigabyte, everything like crazy. But other than that, I guess gaming is always on the forefront of my mind. If you...
Hi, this is Matt
and Sean
from Two Black Guys
with Good Credit. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move.
By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter.
Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice.
Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed, and Haiku is the fastest and lowest cost model in the market, perfectly designed for high volume, high speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Enjoy gaming casually, then maybe you should consider subscribing to the monthly video game briefing, which we do every month with Scott Johnson. And if you enjoy gaming more seriously, then maybe you should consider subscribing to Pixels, which is my bi-monthly gaming show where we go into more details about the games of our world.
Excellent. Go check it out. Frogpants.com/MVGB. We are doing it. We are getting the number short of last month down into the single digits. Thank you, patrons, for becoming patrons. Our goal each month is to get one more patron than last month, and we are just 9 away, one baseball team away from reaching our monthly goal. So if you've ever thought about becoming a member of DTNS and were like, you know what, I want those editor's desks, and I want that newsletter from Roger, and I want those extra bits that you get in the Discord access and all of that, but we will wait. We'll sit here and wait while you go to patreon.com/DTNS and sign up.
Our email address is feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com, and we love your feedback, so please keep it coming. We're also live Monday through Friday. If you can join us live, please do so. 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 20:30 UTC, and find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live.
Back tomorrow with Nicole Lee. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move. By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America NA, copyright 2024.